Welcome to Cheese, Wine, and Christmas, the magical podcast that will help you navigate the crowded world of sentimental holiday specials. Join hosts Brendan Bowes and Deirdre McCarthy as they discuss, critique, and lay bare your favorite Christmas movie tropes. So spike that eggnog and get ready for today's Cheese, Wine, and Christmas.
So, a fabulous episode prep time for Cheese, Wine, and Christmas this day.
Yeah, we're
I'm still recovering from the misery that is Castle for Christmas.
We're doing a lot of people favors.
Yes, so you do not need to watch this one. We will fill you in on everything that happens and why you don't need to watch it. So let's just begin with the fact that right in the trailer, right at the beginning, you see that the star of this is
Brooke Shields.
Brooke Shields. Not old Brooke Shields, new Brooke Shields. This is a very new movie. I think this is its first year.
Yeah, I think it must have recently come out, probably within the last week or two.
Yeah, so we were unlucky enough to find it, and so let's dive right in. So Brooke Shields is an author, because we love those strong women tropes in our Christmas movies. So best-selling author, lots and lots of books, this character that's clearly based on her, and the husband in the book is based on her husband, who we very quickly find out has left her for another woman.
And the way they kind of hint at it originally is because the husband, who quote unquote is the male main lead in the book series, dies.
Yes, she has killed him off. Her character has pushed the husband character down the stairs and killed him. So we are very clearly told through all kinds of very
protests.
Yes.
Like actual protests.
Yes. Like her fans are angry that this happened, and her whole career is possibly in shambles because she killed off one of people's favorite characters, and she did it in a mean way, and it is reflecting her life and how she feels about her husband. How do we know this? Because she's a guest on the Drew Barrymore show.
Another hint that this was a very recent movie.
Yes, and she loses her cool right there on camera and basically lets it slip that, you know, she hates her ex-husband pretty much.
In a way where she could have killed him with mercury poison.
Yes, or ripped him to pieces.
And fed him to sharks.
Yes, and has this little meltdown on the Drew Barrymore show. Now, that's important because we will circle back to that at the end. So that's how we find out. And then, of course, there's the angry agent on the line like, oh my God, your whole career is up in smoke. There's a college-age daughter who she loves who's going off to school. So these were all sort of the things we know about her life. She decides that she needs to get away, you know, as our heroines always do in these situations. She needs to go somewhere completely different, right?
Right, to find the motivation for the next book.
Mm, and to find herself and to escape from her rabid fans who are furious.
Right. Now, if this sounds like a Stephen King book that you may have read back in the 80s, it's very true. It is basically Misery.
So she decides she's going to go back to Scotland she's going to go to Scotland for the first time because her family is from Scotland.
Correct.
And her dad used to tell tales of the castle that he worked at because apparently his family were the groundskeepers and he was a small child and he used to sneak into the castle. By the way, we find this out in tiny little drips throughout the movie, but I'm just giving you that information.
Right.
So she's going to go back to that place. Right. And she's going to visit the castle and feel a closeness to her dad, who may or may not be dead might just be sick, because we're not really sure.
The name of the castle, and if we weren't having subtitles, I would have thought it was something different, is Dunbar.
Yes, the Dunbar.
But so it's D-U-N space Dunbar. The way everyone said it so fast, I thought it was Dunbar.
Yeah, I also, it made me think of The Office.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But anyway, so we don't know if her father's dead or just sick, but apparently they were going to travel back there someday, and she was going to see the castle that he used to sneak into as a small child because the groundspeople were not allowed inside.
Correct.
And so that's basically the premise for why she goes.
Yep. And then minutes into the movie, she's already in Edinburgh.
Right. And yeah, I'm sure you guys are not surprised to hear this, but there's a quaint town inn, like a B&B, as there always is in these Christmas movies. Yes. And the center of town is just beautiful and quaint and very
villagey.
Yes. In fact, it's so villagey that when she walks in, there's a knitting circle in the pub that's part of the bed and breakfast.
Yeah, when you check in, you just go get a pint.
Yes, a pint and pick up some knitting needles and become part of the knitting circle.
Correct. So, and we're immediately introduced to everyone in the knitting circle very quickly.
Yep, and they're important characters because they're going to be, as I'm sure you can imagine, her her stoic, awesome, wonderful friends that see her through this whole adventure. Does she learn how to knit, Brendan? Should we keep them in suspense? Does she become part of the knitting circle? Could that be?
I think we're far enough into this podcast where people should know.
She's definitely becoming part of the knitting circle. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. Yep. And they decorate the town with their knitting and they show up to all kinds of things.
And they give each other their knitting as gifts, even though they're watching each other create.
Right. So that's fun. So here we are. We're established. She's enjoying her roots. By the way, the fans in Scotland are not mad that she killed off.
No.
No. They think it's great that she killed off the husband. So
the Scottish people did not like Winston.
No. So she's very happy in her little village. So what could possibly go wrong? I mean, let's just also add in that she has a bike from nowhere for no reason with a beautiful basket that she rides around town. We don't know. Yeah. Did she buy it? Was it gifted to her? Did she find it? We don't know.
Did she steal it from a little kid?
Right.
No one knows.
But she's riding it. So
before we get on, because I know where we're going here. When she first arrives at the bed and breakfast, she steps out of the taxi and bumps into who we guess is the grounds person.
Yeah, so he's fixing up the... By the way, we never see him at the inn ever again after this. But in the first shot, he's like fixing up the inn and taking care of the...
Well, actually, that's not true. He ends up there a lot. Remember, he throws darts.
That's not only when he's angry later. Right. Yep. In fact, they were all shocked to see him. You're going to have to edit that part out, Brendan, because we can't give that... that has to go. So, okay. So she gets taken to the inn by the one cab driver in town. I don't know if you guys have noticed a theme with this too. There's always only one cab driver in town. His name is Eamon, and he takes her there and she steps out and the handyman, or what we think is the handyman, is outside working on the door in the bushes and doing some stuff with his dog. And she immediately gets knocked over by the dog right into his arms. Just in case you were wondering if this was going to be the love interest or not, they have a moment where they're giddy looking at each other and we think, here he is.
And then you might look at this guy and be like,
he looks familiar.
I think I've seen The Princess Bride. And that, I believe, is Wesley.
Wesley, yes. Wesley from The Princess Bride is the love interest. And that made me just think all movie long, when is he going to say, as you wish?
As you wish.
Right. But anyway, so they have their moment. They meet. All's well and good. She goes in, sees the knitting circle. We're all established. She's loving the village. She's out on her bike. And she decides to visit the castle that her dad has spoke of so much in her youth. She gets there just in time to see the end of a tour.
Yep.
These are the things we learn by watching the tour of the castle and the person who is the tour guide. We learn that the castle is in financial trouble.
I mean, you can make the strong assumption based on the end of that tour.
They're worried about the money and they're worried about nobody went in the gift shop and they're going to have to agree to have a wedding there in order to make ends meet. And we're like, oof, there's definitely going to be some problems with the finances of the castle. Then she rides up on her bike.
Yep.
And she sees the guy giving the tour. Yep. What was his name?
Thomas.
Thomas is sort of the, like, Guy Friday, you know, given the tour. And guess who else is there? Wesley, who's really in this movie, Miles. So he's not Wesley, he's Miles. And he's working on those grounds as well. So she's like, wow, you work everywhere. And he's like, yeah, everywhere that can have me. And lets her know that the castle is actually owned by a snotty, obnoxious
owner,
royalty, somebody, a royal loser, basically.
He was very self-deprecating. I guess that's kind of a spoiler.
Yeah, so we assumed immediately he was talking about himself and that he was secretly the owner, and we were proven right.
Yes, we were.
So, by the way, no explanation as to why the owner of this castle was working at the B&B briefly for a moment, right, never to be referenced ever again.
It may not be a super huge Christmas trope, but for this movie, nothing was ever referenced again.
There was a lot of lack of continuity. So they made a big deal about letting the wedding happen in the castle. So you thought, oh, this is going to be an important wedding later on. Never heard of it again. Yep. So, yeah. So and no references to why he was at the B&B. But he was. Now he's there. She finds out he's the owner. She falls in love with the castle. And she offers to buy it because it's for sale because he's in such dire straits.
So the sequence of order was she showed up on her bike, got her own individualized tour, snuck off, did her own tour.
Found the spot where her dad carved the first part of his name into a wooden door, which we find out later is why they no longer are there, because it got his dad in so much trouble.
Correct.
That they got fired. So
after she got kicked out because she snuck off from her own individual tour, she went back to the knitting group and basically opened up as to who she is, why she was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then for no reason, the knitting group just tossed out their side of why the castle is where it's at, the financial issue that they have, and that it's for sale.
Right. And that if it doesn't all get solved, all of the villagers are in trouble because he's their landlord. And so basically, they're all going to be kicked off their land. So, so she's going to buy the castle. He wants none of that because apparently he's so furious that she snuck off into the castle and looked at a room or two, that now she's his mortal enemy. By the way, I'm pretty sure by the end of this movie that Miles' character has bipolar disorder. And nothing against anybody who has bipolar disorder, but his swings from angry to nice are bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, bizarre is not even the right...
Is gracious.
Yeah.
So they're furious with each other, and he says, you can't buy it. And she's like, fine, I hate you. And she storms off.
But this conversation is happening in the middle of a field that has a table with a tea kettle while he is clay shooting.
Right. But he never reloads his gun until he's shot like seven or eight shots, and then he reloads the gun, and with two, because that's all, because it's a rifle,
it's a hunting rifle. Yeah.
So again, no sense. And then his real estate person yells at him for blowing the sale and says, well, now you've just sold your castle to the bank because blah blah blah. So while she's drowning her sorrows at the pub / sewing circle /
inn,
he comes up and he sidles into the seat next door, and he has an offer.
Yep.
Do you want to elaborate on that?
So it's a sale of the castle,
but
he had his own
stipulations.
Stipulation one was that he overcharged her and was open about it for the deposit she had to make.
Yep.
It goes into a 90-day escrow, which he specifically said runs out on Christmas Day.
Yes, because Christmas Day is always the arbitrary deadline for everything. Correct. Christmas Eve. It's always one or the other.
Christmas. Mm-hmm. And then the third stipulation, I think the last one, was that she had to move in immediately.
And stay those 3 months and learn how to run the castle. Because he thinks she is just some hoity-toity person who has a whim.
Just wants to buy it to say that she owns a castle, because that's what... book writers do.
But it's like his heart and soul, so he wants her to know, you know.
Correct.
Now, his real plan, we find out immediately later because he's talking to Thomas. By the way, the relationship between him and Thomas is never fully explained. They're clearly incredibly close. Right. Thomas lives there with him, runs the whole castle, does the whole thing, but we don't know why. There's no explanation.
There's dialogue where it makes it sound like they've known each other since they were kids.
Since they were little kids, but we have no idea how he's the person running it.
Right.
So he also has the hots for somebody in the sewing circle, but it's unrequited.
Right. Okay. But the knitting circle crush, she is also the innkeeper?
Oh, yes. She's the innkeeper, the lead knitting person.
She wasn't the van driver.
No, she was not the van driver. We'll get to the van later. So his plan is to make it so miserable for her that she has to leave, and then he gets her deposit, helps run the castle, and he gets to keep his castle.
Right. The deposit will run the castle mm-hmm. through the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. So he puts her in the worst room. There's no heat. It's ripped apart. There's no place to put her clothes. It's a hot mess.
Right. Apparently, when it rains, the rain seeps through.
Yeah. And it's just miserable. She'll never last. It's like a real Cinderella room. But he doesn't know about the knitting circle's powers, and he underestimates them greatly.
Nope.
They come and decorate the whole room and make it cozy and warm and wonderful.
Yep. So, they threw down one carpet.
I don't know. Put some curtains up. Carpet, I don't know. Knit some stuff. And all of a sudden, it
becomes
was great.
80 degrees in there.
Yes, it was wonderful after that. So we have our first almost moment. Well, then, because we have the musical montage. So time goes by and we see them annoying each other and getting in each other's way. But then, they start to warm up to each other, as one does. What do they call that when the hostage and the hostage taker
get Stockholm syndrome?
So there's a little bit of that. Meanwhile, she's back and forth to the knitting circle with her bike. And the knitting circle has a van that they show up in and pick her up. And everybody's great. It's all great.
Right.
And then there's almost a kiss.
Right.
What led to the almost a kiss? What were they doing right before they were at the bottom of the stairs? Wasn't that the special tour of the?
The special tour ends at the well.
Yeah. Yeah. So they start to have some moments where they're getting along, and he decides he's really going to show her what the grounds are all about. So we have another montage
where they go
horseback riding and driving around. No, they don't horseback ride to the Christmas tree shopping.
Oh, you're right.
So they're in a car, and there's sheep and there's cows and there's laughing and there's fun. And then he takes her to this little sacred spot where there's a well, and there's a whole legend about somebody
female warrior.
Well, she was a duchess, she was royalty, and she gave all that up to go to war as a warrior, and she married a commoner and came back.
Right. The commoner went to war with her and stood by her side.
So it's a legend that has to do with the place.
And your favorite part about that was?
Was that he said she came to this well and put a necklace down there for good luck and then went off to war. I don't know why a necklace. I don't know why there. There's no explanation for that.
Nope.
But now townspeople leave odd bits of jewelry there.
Right.
No Knick-knacks. Explanation. Yes, yeah. I don't know why there was a necklace. So he's going to end the tour there, but she suggests they end it in the pub. Now, this is why I said, no, it didn't make sense that he was working outside the pub that day. Because when he shows up at the pub, everybody's shocked that he's there. Because typically he doesn't grace the pub with his presence.
Correct.
And he's there and he's awkward and they're all dancing and singing because all of a sudden now there's an Irish band there. I don't know when they got there.
Right. And the bartender just happens to have
his drink waiting for him.
Miles' drink ready to go.
I guess he knows what he drinks. So
just keeps it in the fridge.
They try to get him to sing. They try to get him to dance. And he's like, oh, no, I can't do that. And he's all weird and awkward and out of place. So they get home from this crazy day they've spent together. And they're about a half an inch from each other's face. And I called it. I was like, this is the fake kiss.
Almost.
This is the almost kiss, because every one of these has it, where they almost kiss or they kiss and then stop. And we can't do this kind of thing. They literally, like something out of a joke or an SNL skit, were like wiggling their mouths all around as they were about a half an inch from each other's face, like they were gonna kiss. Like,
so my guess is that the script said their lips quiver.
Yes,
and
they took that very literally.
And like Deirdre said, they interpreted it as an SNL skit.
Yes, so they almost kiss and they don't. And then they're going off their separate ways, and he makes it clear he does not want a relationship, and she's mad, and so she storms off. And by the way,
takes the dog
with her, because of course the dog that once knocked her over because he doesn't like strangers is now favoring her over his master, as one does.
So yeah. Sophie and the dog are spooning in bed.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so Sophie and the dog. And, you know, he's off like... He hits the banister on his way. Like, damn, I'm so stupid.
Stupid. And meanwhile, while all this is happening, interspersed are Skype calls with Sophie and her daughter and Sophie and her agent.
Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of things that look like they're going to turn into another story. Like the agent suggests, you know, she uses her situation and pretends a romance so that, you know, they can get good publicity. And you think, ooh, I wonder if he's going to find that out and get mad. But no, that never goes anywhere.
Nope.
There's a couple that that checks into the inn. And
this kind of jumps forward a bit. But
they're clearly, well, it doesn't matter because it means nothing.
Right.
And they get the honeymoon suite and you think they're going to be an important couple later on. Like, is it Sophie's ex-husband and the wife he's going to marry, which we find out he's getting married because the daughter can't come for Christmas because she's going to her dad's wedding, which, of course, is on Christmas Day.
Right. But going back to this couple, like, they had their own scene. Like, they were their own characters. The husband walks in and he looks like the dude from Monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife is all prancing around in the background. And
they
like,
check in and we never hear from them again.
Right.
Ever. Also, Miles overhears her talking to the daughter about the wedding. That's one of the first things they really bond over. And he talks about how he had a love that broke his heart. We never see her. We never meet her. We never learn anything else about it.
Just that 10-second window of when he says it. That's it.
And you're
that's
like, oh, she's going to show up at the... Nope.
Nope.
So, while they're all bonding and she's learning all about the village, she also finds out during her special tour with Miles that the castle used to throw a party every Christmas Eve or Christmas Day? Christmas Eve.
Yep. It turned out to be Christmas Eve.
Yeah, so keep in mind, every movie we've seen so far has a Christmas Eve party.
Yeah,
where
Christmas trope alert.
Where the village all comes for no reason.
Or the town or the city
the
or
town,
whatever. It's
right.
where everyone who, quote unquote, matters converges.
Can converge, yes. So they haven't had it in a few years, but now they're going to do it again.
Correct.
They're going to do it again. It's now that Miles and Sophie are getting along some of the time. Because he gets mad at her for very strange reasons. The next time he gets mad at her is when the knitting circle comes to pick her up and she's done all their hair, because by the way, she can do hair.
Oh, she's
too.
She's a hairstylist. She lived above a barber shop.
Right. So now she knows how to do people's hair.
She colored one of the the baker's hair and then nicely styled everyone else's.
Yeah, and she cut too. Right. Yeah.
Including Angus. He got a nice beard trim.
We haven't even mentioned Angus.
No, we haven't.
Angus is the only male in the sewing circle and his heart is broken because his husband, so we've got like the lovely homophobic
LGBT group.
So his husband passed away and he hasn't spoken since, except he sings.
And they don't make a deal out of it.
Right. But you know he's going to speak at some point in the movie when it's critical. So she did Angus's hair. She did all their hair. Okay. And that enrages Miles. Now, it takes a while to figure out what he's exactly enraged about. But what he's enraged about is that she has become like so beloved and such a part of his world. And he wasn't asking for that and grumpf and all of that. So how does he show his anger? He storms over.
Passive aggressive.
To the pub Well, they're all having a lovely time knitting, and he storms around for a while, and then he plays some aggressive darts, and he glares at her, and he drinks a whole bottle of whiskey.
Oh, it's creepy.
And it's like, what is he so mad about?
He is really creepy there.
Right. So that fight lasts, what, 5 minutes? Because when she gets back to the castle and yells at him.
It turns into something like, I wish I'd never met you.
Right. So they have a big line. Yeah. And then the next thing you know, he's finishing her dad's carving into the door as an apology.
Yeah. He has like a huge knife and a mallet, and that somehow is precise enough to.
Yes. So, because her dad only got halfway through the name before they got kicked out of the castle. So,
Brooke Shields' married name is Sophie Brown, but her maiden name is McGinty.
Yes. So he finishes the McGinty carved in the door, and she says, is that an apology? And all of a sudden they're friends again, right? Then they have sex.
She finds a dress in one of the bedrooms.
Yes, because, you know, there were just dresses lying around, and she decides she's going to wear it to the
bedroom
Christmas
nine
Eve party.
Or something.
Yeah. So she's got it on, and he spots her, and once again he's furious.
Well, no, the dog steals her shoe. The dog steals her shoe, and she has to chase the dog.
It's a very Cinderella moment,
right?
Like the
who ends up stopping right in front of Miles's door. She fights the dog for the shoe, and then as she wins, he is leaving the bedroom,
and he's horrified at the sight of the dress. Now you think this is going to lead to him like confessing it was his ex-wife's, but no. He just gets mad, says, you shouldn't be wearing that.
Yeah, and Sophie was like, if this is your mom's or your grandmother's, I won't wear it.
And he just says, you shouldn't be wearing it. And they have a little tiny tiff, and then they have sex.
Yep.
Because that's what happens.
And because this is pure speculation on my part, because they are the only couple at that point in the room, in the castle, voices echo.
So you think they had loud sex? Is that what you're
thinking? Well, there's no other way Thomas sets up a magnificent breakfast just for the two of them the next morning.
The next morning.
Calls them lovebirds.
Angus is in the house for no reason we know of. There's a huge buffet spread out that I thought originally was for the Christmas Eve party, but it's not. It's apparently all about Thomas creating a romantic atmosphere for the two lovebirds. So he sets up a little table for breakfast. He calls them lovebirds. They have a little giggle, say, oh my God, the whole village is going to know. Ooh, right? Yep. And then we have musical montage number
three. Of them dancing.
Yeah. We have them dancing, him teaching her standard dances, and them adoring each other and doing
laughing.
Smooches. And and that ends in a big fight. I know you guys are shocked, but that ends in a big fight because she suggests that he not move out after Christmas, that they have a life together.
Yep. This is the big one.
Yeah.
This is the atomic bomb.
Yes. They have a life together. And he is infuriated. How dare she offer him a room in the castle he grew up in? Blah, blah, blah. I never asked for you. Blah, 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 blah. Wah, wah, wah. And so she goes running off. There's lots of ugly crying. She leaves with her suitcase. Now she doesn't need a bike or anybody to pick her up in the van. It's apparently walking distance to the village.
So
the dog chases her out because he loves her more than his master by now.
And just stops halfway.
Yep.
To really reiterate, they really made a focus that you have to have some mode of transportation
to get to the castle.
To get from the village to the castle.
But she walks it with her in the snow.
Yeah.
With her suitcase.
I'm guessing in flats.
Mm-hmm.
No sneakers or boots or anything like that.
Yeah.
And she must have cardio of a champion because
she makes it back to the inn in no time flat.
And wasn't out of breath.
But she was crying, ugly crying.
True.
Right. So, but she's got with her a bunch of presents. She got them all from Macy's. We're not sure why. And she knew all their sizes.
Fifth Avenue.
Yeah. So she bought them all beautiful dresses from, so they can
look. Big hoity-toity New York shopping places.
So they can look pretty at the ball. But she is not going to the ball.
No.
She's going home.
Right. The knitting group did collaborate on a gift for her.
They made her beautiful hand-knit cardigan.
Yes.
That looked like something out of Joseph and the Amazing Dream Coat.
And she immediately put it on.
Yep. And she's going to head out. So Eamon, the cab driver, because he's the only one, takes her out. But guess what? In the middle of the village, his car breaks.
And he takes a look at it.
And he says...
He just opens the hood, looks at it, was like, yeah, we're fucked.
Yeah, it's broke. So he leaves it in the center of town right there on the road. Yep. And he goes back to the pub for a drink. Yep. So now she's stuck, staying overnight. What could happen?
She tries to get anyone from the knitting club to drive her to the airport.
Nope.
And they're all like,
having...
it's snowing.
Yep.
We're not,
yep.
We don't do it.
So she's sad because she's not going to see her daughter on Christmas.
Correct.
She's stuck here in Scotland. Everybody's going to the party.
But she doesn't want to.
But she doesn't want to. So she's crying in her pajamas, trying to write her book when all of a sudden she hears something at the window.
Yep. So sounds kind of like someone's throwing snowballs at the window.
Yep. So she opens it up and gets a snowball right to the face. And who's down there on horseback? We met the horses earlier when they went Christmas tree hunting in the forest.
Yep.
So, you know, because she all of a sudden she can ride horses too. So she can, in case you're lost track, she's an author. She can cut hair and dye hair and she
Style,
can ride yeah. horses and a bike. So,
yes.
yeah. So he throws the snowball. She closes the window in anger. He's like, oh, I messed up. He's dressed beautifully in a red plaid kilt and tuxedo jacket that would match aforementioned dress perfectly.
Correct. And but he does take a decent amount of time sitting there going, wow, I really messed up.
Yeah.
I'm just going to stand here and
yeah. But as he walks away, she cleverly comes to the door and throws a snowball at him.
Still wearing pajamas.
Yep. Crying. Think. Big, ugly, snotty cry
but
face.
But wearing her riding
her
boots.
Her riding boots, right? He comes back. They profess their love for each other. Like, I mean, full on, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Yep. I can't be sad about losing. I won't be sad about losing Dun Dunbar. I'd be more sad losing you or something,
yes.
something like
and
that.
And he's going to follow her if she goes to America. And if she stays, that's great too. So 2 seconds to fix everything.
Yep.
They head off to the ball. The next time we see her, her hair is perfectly coiffed. She's back in the dress. She is still wearing the cardigan, however.
Yes.
And they enter the ballroom where everybody's having a wonderful time.
And they're properly introduced.
Yeah.
So everyone knew that she was coming.
And now all of a sudden it's as if the people making the movie ran out of time. So they announce
Well, when
that
we get to the actual end, they yeah. ran out of time.
They announce that there's a special guest and it turns out to be
She's
her.
Arrived.
Yes. And we're like, who could she be? Turns out, you guessed it, it's her daughter,
Lexi.
Right? Yeah, her daughter Lexi has shown up. So Sophie's daughter is there. So I don't know how he arranged that between telling her to get the hell out of his life and professing his love. But somehow, and how long is that flight? Like 10 hours? But
oh, yeah.
Somehow oh, yeah. he gets her daughter there. Or he was planning it all along and what was he going to do after she left? Who knows?
Who knows? All that mattered is
all
it worked
that matters.
Out.
It worked out. She's here. She was like, "Yeah, I'll go to Dad's next wedding." As if he's been married a million times. By the way, he just divorced Lexi's mom, Sophie,
Correct.
A year ago. So
yep.
no like record of multiple marriages. But yeah, I'll go to the next one.
Well, I'll just make the joke just because.
So of course, Brenda and I are like, "Ooh, that couple in the hotel and the wedding they booked. That's going to be no. It's not. It wasn't her.
Nope.
It wasn't anything.
They
it was
introduced
nothing.
Them and did." Nothing.
Yeah. So Lexi's her. There. We have a wonderful time at the party. The next thing you know, it's Christmas morning and they're kissing like they're a couple and they're all hanging out like they've been together forever.
So the ending sequence is
yes.
as follows.
Mm-hmm.
Brooke Shields walks down the stairs, sits down in, I guess, the fireplace room.
With her computer.
Yep. And starts typing out the
new book.
The new book.
That's not going to be her old character. She's digressing and she's writing
right.
a brand new book, brand new character based on the warrior woman who left her necklace
Correct.
At the well.
Correct.
Yes.
So she's typing that. And then Lexi comes in with hot chocolate.
And full on outdoor gear as if she's been outside. With no,
right,
by the way, nobody references that. Brooke Shields is, Sophie is in her pajamas. And her daughter's in like a
right,
knit
like,
hat and gloves.
Like she
and,
had to go into town for hot chocolate.
Right. Like she was skiing or something, but it had whipped cream on top. Like it just came from the kitchen. It
yep.
was very confusing. And, so she's in there.
And then Miles walks in.
In his satin bathrobe.
Yep. Like he could have been smoking a pipe
right,
at this
right.
point. Gives Sophie a charm necklace.
Off the tree. Here, I got you a present. When he got that, I don't know whether it was when they loved each other, they hated each other. I don't know. Stores are apparently open all the time in the village.
And then the movie ends.
Yeah. Here,
that
I bought this for you. Really? And then the movie is over.
I mean, the whole sequence I just spoke of, like, was the last 15 seconds of the movie, including Brooke Shields walking downstairs.
And we're like, okay, there's going to be, like, some type of 5 years later epilogue.
Yeah.
But instead, the epilogue was just her on Drew Barrymore's show. Remember, I said we were going to circle back to that, talking about her new successful book. However,
it's done in the most bizarre.
Editing cuts of it, it doesn't make any sense. Like, that person should be fired. They're,
well, it was hard to tell if it was supposed to be a sequential.
Like, it was supposed to be like quick cuts, like funny, interesting quick cuts, but they didn't make any sense.
Right. But the cuts were so tight that it seemed jump cutty.
Yeah, it seemed like the camera was just jumping.
Right. It didn't come off as a montage like I'm guessing that they wanted.
And it wasn't linear and it didn't make sense.
No.
And that was the end during the credits.
Yep.
So I did forget to say that in three random spots in the movie, the Brooke Shields character, Sophie, self-narrated as if that was going to be a thing through the whole movie, but it wasn't.
It was
another thing they just did here and there.
It was at the beginning,
like 2 seconds in the middle, and then near the end when she was doing that last bit of writing.
Yes. Yeah. When she started the pages of her new book.
Yeah. Where it just was her voice narrating over, like, yep, like a voiceover. Yeah, for no reason.
And then it ends, and that's...
So I think they were drunk and on a time constraint making this movie.
Yes.
It was like, we've got... I felt a little bit to me like the films I see when we do the 48-hour film festival, and stuff gets left out that was important, and cuts don't make sense, and things get referenced that you never hear of again because...
That get dropped pretty quickly.
Yeah, because in the editing thing, you've only got so much time.
Correct.
Yeah. And this is the worst acting I've ever seen Brooke Shields do, and I don't think she's a terrible actor, but this was terrible acting.
And to piggyback on what Deirdre just said, one of the big things that Brooke Shields did was express herself with a lot of...
Oh, as an acting coach, my least favorite thing is, I call it dramatic breathing. There was, he did it too. Wesley / Miles did it too, where it was like,
we watch it with subtitles on, and every other 5 seconds it just said deep exhale.
Yeah, deep exhale or sigh, or yeah, it was ridiculous. So I'm going to give this a... All right, I'm not going to go so low as we did on
the...
It's
not El Camino Christmas.
It's not El Camino Christmas, because this was actually a Christmas movie. It was very... Oh, forgot to mention that decorations. Every time they showed the castle, it had more decorations inside and out with no reference to how they got there. It was like bunnies, like multiplying. Like,
or weeds. Yeah,
or
it
weeds.
Just,
like,
it just grew.
Grew. Like, it was... I mean, it would have taken Martha Stewart's entire crew 2 months to do
right.
what happened.
They had Thomas and apparently Angus to do all of that.
So, yeah. So it was indeed Christmassy. And so for that reason only, I won't go as low as Camino Christmas, but I'm going to give it a 2.
I was thinking 2 as well.
2, yeah. 2. So do not put this on your holiday watch list. It's going to be popping up on your Netflix all over the place. Resist, my friends. Resist.
You're going to see Brooke Shields and the dude from Saw and Princess Bride and be like, wow, this might seem interesting.
Yeah, this is going to be good.
And
no.
Spoiler
no,
alert.
Yeah,
no.
No. Nope. It is not. So on that note, I wish you a holly jolly.
Indeed.
All right. Cheers with your cocoa and go watch something else.
Bye.
Bye.